Hello everybody, and welcome to a new episode of Gaming in the Wild, a video games podcast about games from the artistic, creative side of the tracks, from indie to AAA. My name's John, I'm your host, and right now in Reykjavik it's a dark, stormy Sunday night, but it's the first episode of the new year. It's been a while since I picked up the mic. We had all of those Games of the Year episodes to tide us over the back end of 2021. And it's really nice to be in front of the mic again to start off 2022 with a new episode. And the featured game of this episode will be a really nice, pleasant, quite surprising Game Pass title called The Gunk, made by the creators of the SteamWorld universe. I had a really nice time with that over the Christmas holiday, so I'll be talking about that game in this episode's featured review spot. And I thought I would start off this new year, new episode, just with a little catch-up, really. I've played a lot of games over the holiday. I went back to the UK for a little family visit, but for a lot of the time I was here in Iceland, quarantine is in effect. It's not a heavy one, but it's a quarantine nonetheless. So there was plenty of time to play games, and I got through quite a few. For some reason, I caught a bit of AAA hype at the end of last year. I think it was all of that Game Awards talk and all of that end of the year list talk got me thinking that I hadn't played a lot of the games people were talking about, and it made me curious to do so. So a lot of them were on sale after the Game Awards, so I picked up Guardians of the Galaxy, I picked up Life is Strange, True Colors, Metroid Dread, Miles Morales, Resident Evil Village. I bought all of those because they were all on half price or less. I just treated myself. I thought I'm going to be here in the house over the Christmas period. I want to have some games to play, and I felt excited to try those games. The main one that I played over the holidays was Miles Morales, the Spider-Man sequel, because it's actually set at Christmas. So it just felt like a really good time to tuck into that game. I've had a lot of people recommend it to me, and because it's a PS5 game, it's nice to play something that is made for the PS5. So I played that one. It was a really enjoyable game, actually. It involves swinging around a beautiful rendition of New York City as Miles Morales, like a kind of a new, younger Spider-Man apprentice. And it does what you would expect. It's a superhero story, but there is lots to like in this game. I loved the depiction of New York City at Christmas. It was just lovely. And moving around the city, you know, traversal and fluid traversal and fun movement are things that I really enjoy. And Miles Morales had those. It was absolutely joyful just swinging around the city. You could almost fly. You could just fly between these tower blocks. It was really fun to do. And everywhere you looked, you could see New York. You could see the ice rink in Central Park. You could see Fifth Avenue. You could see the Museum of Modern Art, the Empire State Building, and you're just swinging through Greenwich and Uptown and around Battery Park at the bottom of Manhattan. And it really took me back to my trip there. I spent a month in New York City a few years ago in the winter. And so I remember those sub-zero temperatures and the beautiful snowy cityscape. So I had a really nice time with Miles Morales. It was so much fun that I ended up clearing the entire map of Manhattan of every little quest and side quest that you can do. And I really enjoyed it. It was the perfect game for the holidays. It really was. And Resident Evil Village made a nice counterpart to that. After I finished Miles, I went back into Resident Evil Village. I'm still on the very last part of that game. But as you might have heard on those Games of the Year episodes, it entered into my top 10. It was a real good surprise, that game. But as I moved on from those ones into the new year, I'm replaying Pyre, which you might remember from a previous episode. It's kind of the black sheep of the Supergiant Games family. They've only made 4 games, and they've all been hits, but Pyre seems to be the one that is a little forgotten. I think some people, like game collectors, haven't played it because it never got a physical release. So it's a digital-only game. It's also only on PC and PlayStation. It's not on Xbox, and it's not on Switch. Very strange, really, considering that Supergiant launched Hades on Switch. and that Bastion and Transistor really found their home on Switch to some degree, I would expect a remaster of Pyre at some point to get that beautiful hand-drawn artwork in 4K and to get it onto some new systems. It's a very eccentric game, kind of a wizard sports ball game with a visual novel story that really sprawls, and you move through hand-drawn neon maps and meet very strange people who join your party until you have a massive party of people. It's a very interesting story about people that have been cast down from the Commonwealth, kind of a high fantasy story, and they're now living in the downside, like a kind of a magical wasteland that exists beneath the Commonwealth. That's a really good game, and I'm having such a good time with it. Every time I play Pyre, I play with a big smile on my face. It's an absolutely beautiful game. I also picked up a couple of indies in the Switch sale. I got Ender Lilies. It's a very beautiful looking Metroidvania. I would say a post Hollow Knight Metroidvania. It's got some Soulsy aspects to it. There is a strong emphasis on learning the patterns of your enemies, on learning where the enemies are going to come from, on dodging and parrying, and then striking back. So it has that quite precise combat, which I'm not especially good at, I'll be honest. But I've played 4 or 5 hours of Ender Lilies. I found it to be quite difficult, but I've got past 4 different bosses now. I believe there are 10 in total. But I'm really enjoying it. It's got a beautiful art style. It's really dark and desaturated, hand-drawn, side-on, gloomy fantasy world in which you play as a young girl who just glows white. And as you run through this devastated world, you discover the history of it. You discover how the kingdom fell, and you meet key characters from this fallen kingdom along the way. So much like many games have you playing a slightly mystical, younger, naive outsider who is coming through a fallen kingdom which has been struck by some kind of blight or curse or something like that. It's such a huge trend in game storytelling, you know, from Horizon Zero Dawn through to Kena Bridge of Spirits through to Hollow Knight, to be honest. And half the games that I play seem to have this storyline of you being a stranger who has to get to the bottom of a fallen kingdom somehow. And this game has that kind of story, but it's quite arresting. It has a fairy tale quality to it, but it's also very gothic and dark, which is an aesthetic that I do enjoy. And it is something that Hollow Knight did very well. This game is clearly indebted to Hollow Knight in the gameplay, in the style of the map, although the map is, I would say, slightly improved, in the combat and the exploration and the visual style and mood. It owes an awful lot to Hollow Knight, but it is its own game. And I think that fans of Hollow Knight who are waiting for Silksong could do a lot worse than to try out Ender Lilies. The other game I've been playing in my rotation at the moment is a game that I've had my eye on for quite a while called Heaven's Vault. This is a visual novel made by Inkle, who made Overboard, a game that I reviewed last year. Heaven's Vault is an interesting hand-drawn visual novel that has a few different styles to it. So there are parts where you are traversing these rivers that connect the moons of a nebula, and you have to sail your ship around by using the trigger buttons on the controller. Then there are times when you land on these moons. One of them is your university planet. You are a young woman who is studying to become an archaeologist. And so you go around the moons, you have to search environments, you find artifacts, and they have etchings and runes on them. And a big part of the game is trying to decode these runes through quite an interesting style where you look at these symbols that look a little like Sanskrit or something like that, and you have to assign words to them speculatively that are then proven to be correct or incorrect as you find more runes. So it's actually a very interesting game. It's interesting in that it covers archaeology and language in a very authentic feeling way. Like, for example, if you find a statue that is by a well, and then there is a statue of a goddess overlooking the place that you found this inscription, you can infer from that that the inscription might be to do with water and it might be to do with the goddess. And apparently this is a methodology that is used in archaeology to decipher words that have been left in significant locations through using the context of that location. And you'll get a lot of words wrong when you first try to decode them, but then you get a question mark next to them. And then as you find further clues, you'll learn more words. And as you learn more words, they can plug into all of the etchings that you found, which are stored in your inventory. And so you really do feel like you're cracking the puzzle of a forgotten language. And by doing so, you are learning the history of the kingdom that came before the era that you live in now. And so this is a very interesting game. It's quite slow and the controls aren't great, but the story is just fascinating. And the themes of this game and the archaeology and the linguistics are fascinating. So I feel sure that I will talk about Ender Lilies and Heaven's Vault in future episodes. So I'll leave them there for now, but that's what I've been playing since Christmas and the New Year. But before we move on to that review of the gunk, I will briefly mention that this show is patron supported. I have a lovely little community of patrons who chip in to help me run the podcast every month. We had two new patrons at the start of this year, which was a really nice way to start the year. So thank you very much to Costas and Christian for signing up on the Patreon. Patreon members get the occasional extra episode. They get weekly sale recommendations from me on PlayStation and Switch and sometimes Steam. They get an invite to the Discord community. This is a really nice little corner of the internet where we just hang out and talk every day about games, tell people what we're playing, share things that people have made. We post in there, people suggest games for the podcast. There's lots of good games chat going on in there. So you're welcome to come and join us. If you would like to support the podcast, you can do so at patreon.com/gamingin the wild for as little as $1 a month. There are a couple of other tiers if you would like to give more. I really appreciate every single patron. It lets me know that people out there are listening and appreciating what I'm doing with the show. So you are very welcome to join us. It's patreon.com/gamingin the wild. And I'll put a link in the show notes if you would like to find that and join in. And with that said, let's move on to the featured game of the episode, a really fun Xbox Game Pass title called The Gunk. This happens every so often when I'm doing a podcast and I'm editing in music to give some atmosphere, music from the games I'm talking about, and I usually leave 30 seconds. People can use the podcast skip buttons if they don't want to hear the music in 30-second increments on most players, I believe. But occasionally there is a piece of music and I'm just listening to it as I'm recording and as I'm editing, and I find it so striking that I just can't stop it and fade in my voice. It's too beautiful. And one of the best aspects of The Gunk is this amazing orchestral soundtrack made by an artist called Rat Vader. And this soundtrack elevated this game. It really did. If you listen to the show often, you'll know that I have a soft spot for chamber music. I have a soft spot for string composition, and especially for deep instruments like the contrabass and the cello. And as I was playing The Gunk, there was just a non-stop succession of beautiful pieces, like the one that we just heard and the one that played at the beginning of this podcast, that just really pulled me into the game. There was a lot to like about this game. It's quite a simple game, but the music was really the cherry on the cake. And music makes a huge difference in games to me. I listen to a lot of music in life generally, and I do love music. And so when I can have the kind of the multimedia experience of playing a video game that has beautiful visuals, that has satisfying interaction, that has a story you can engage with, and also has great sound and music to it too. It's really one of the most satisfying sensory experiences that I can think of is to play video games. It's just the most intrinsically multidisciplinary format. And The Gunk was one of those games where everything really came together. But I'm getting a little ahead of myself. Let's talk about the basics of this game. So this game came out in 2021, right at the tail end of the year. It was developed by Image and Form and published by Thunderful. The people behind this game have previously been responsible for creating the SteamWorld universe, which I know a lot of people like. I've played a little bit of SteamWorld, but I didn't really get into it. I didn't know that it was the SteamWorld developers until after I had played it, but from what I understand, this is their first foray into 3D games, because all of the SteamWorld games are 2D and largely pixel art. So it's their first step into this world, a little like Housemarque going from the games that they've made previously to Returnal. This is Image and Form's step forward. It's out on Game Pass. It's also available on PC. How long to beat has the game at 5.5 hours? It took me 6 hours. I took my time and I had an 85% achievement. Metacritic currently has the game at 71%, which seems fine, maybe a little low from what I would give the game. And the developers describe it like this. They say The Gunk stars a pair of gritty space haulers struggling to make a buck as they chance upon an untouched planet brimming with life. They came in search of valuable resources, and it looks like they've hit the jackpot. But as they uncover the dormant secrets of a shattered civilization, they must battle the curse of a toxic gunk parasite. Uncover the mystery, cleanse the gunk, save the planet. And the way I describe this game is that The Gunk is a fun and wholesome sci-fi adventure that hails back to the heyday of 3D platformers, with a fun Luigi's Mansion-style vacuum mechanic, good voice acting, a superb orchestral soundtrack. It's an enjoyable Game Pass indie that doesn't outstay its welcome. So I had a really nice time with this one. It was one of those games that just creeps up on Game Pass. Maybe you haven't heard of it before. I certainly hadn't. And all of a sudden, there it is. So you just download it and give it a try. And there's like a 50-50 ratio with me. Maybe I'll play half an hour and just uninstall the game because it's not catching me. But very occasionally, I'll just get completely stuck into whatever I'm trying, and it will become my main game until I finished it. Game Pass is a great service, I think, for bite-sized indies, because much like Netflix is a great service for episodic TV shows, you know, and it might not be the finest films in all of humanity, but it's just a very good quality selection of bite-sized entertainment. I think Game Pass is a great way to deliver those experiences. And so I think The Gunk is a very good Game Pass game. And in this game, you play a space scavenger called Rani. She's one half of a duo. She's the adventurer who goes out into the landscape to take care of exploration and excursions and mining and finding resources. And then back at the ship is her partner, Bex, who is the brains of the operation to some degree, who is the pilot of the ship and a bit more of a homebody. And as you travel around this world on which the two have landed, they're constantly talking. So the voice acting between Rani and Bex is really nice, really intimate, really chatty. They talk to each other constantly as you're playing. So it's a really clever little device to tell you what's happening, to tell you backstory, little nuggets of the relationship between the two and the kind of lifestyle that they have. And so they are explorers. They go around to planets trying to find resources that they can sell. You can tell from the off that they are not rich and that they have to work hard and take risks to find money. And so they've sat down on this unexplored planet just to see what's there. They're just giving it a spin. And the game begins when you are dropped onto the planet's surface. You can see the ship hovering above you, and it kind of traces your steps through the first canyon of the game with Rani and Bex chatting away on the radio about what Rani is seeing. And it turns out that the planet is quite beautiful. There are large mushrooms and mycelial-looking vegetation. There are huge trees. There are brightly coloured leaves and foliage. And it's really nice as you're running through the first opening section of this game. the characters themselves have a look that's somewhere between, I would say, contemporary animation and puppetry. They have this puppety look to them, like they have maybe been whittled out of something. They're not as smooth as the kind of Pixar-y style. They're a little more handmade than that. So it's an interesting art style. It maybe belongs somewhere closer to Psychonauts 2 than something like Luigi, for example. And so as you're running through this beautiful planet, you can scan the vegetation. This is a feature that I really like. It's a feature that I liked in Metroid Prime, where you just hold down a shoulder button, these green lasers come out at whatever you're looking at, and they start to tell you stuff about it. They start to tell you about these vegetation, these vegetables, these crystals, this colory leafy flora, and peaceful indigenous animals. And so you get a nice feeling about this world as you're running through it. It seems like you may have found a good planet to explore. There seems to be some valuable minerals. And you're taught how to use Rani's power glove, which is a tool that is attached to her arm that allows her to do all kinds of things, one of which is to vacuum up resources. So if you see something that looks good, like some metal ore sticking out of the ground, or some interesting-looking plants that can be processed into biofuel, you can hold down the one of the shoulder buttons to aim and the other shoulder button to vacuum, and you can suck up things from the environment, and they become resources that you can then spend. But as you're happily running around this valley, just taking in the planet, you come across a dark, bubbling, sticky substance that's kind of grey and black and has these red bubbles that grow and pop. It's really gross, like boils. And Rani calls it the gunk, and it's gumming up the way forward. It's blocking your way forward. And so Bex says, well, scan it, see if we can use it. You scan it, you figure out that you can turn it into biofuel, even though it's kind of disgusting. And so Rani starts vacuuming up this gunk. She christens it the gunk. And this is where you get into the main mechanic of the game, which is slowly sucking away these walls of disgusting gunk. It's really satisfying, especially if you're the kind of person that likes to clean, that likes to make things clean, that likes things to be neat and likes things to be cleaned away. I'm a little bit like this sometimes. I find it quite relaxing sometimes to clean and to put things in order. If you are that kind of person, you will enjoy this game. And after you vacuumed up that first piece of gunk, Bex sets down the ship and you head back. You talk to her. The two of you decide that you're going to explore this planet and look for more resources. And Rani is very excited to get back out again. So you have a base camp. You have a few paths leading off into the wilderness. And so with that very well done introductory chapter, you're very much ready to set out into this world and see what the rest of this mysterious planet has in store for you. And the moment-to-moment to gameplay in the gunk is really quite satisfying. It's quite linear, and you will set out from camp down a pathway. You'll soon find some obstacles. The obstacles vary from perhaps a plant that has wilted, and you need it to be fresh and verdant so that you can use its leaves as platforms. You have to plant seeds to grow plants that you can use as platforms. You have to use the vacuum glove to clear away patches of gunk. And all the while you're collecting resources. There are resources everywhere. They are tucked away in corners. They are hidden in nooks and crannies. And you use them to upgrade your glove. And so the game incentivizes you to search every corner looking for resources. So I was very happy just exploring the map, doing these gentle puzzles, finding my way forward, discovering new things to scan, discovering new resources to collect, listening to Bex and Rani chatter away. You start to discover that there are some signs of civilization. There are some old stone structures. There is some old alien tech growing out of this alien jungle. And so the story starts to unravel in a really interesting way. As you're exploring, you're discovering more about the planet, you're learning more about Rani and Bex, you are gathering your resources, you're solving puzzles. But as you're travelling forward, the gunk itself gets more intense. The patches of gunk get bigger and more aggressive. It stops being a stationary thing that's on the wall and starts to be clouds that are moving around freely. It starts to spit out little enemies, little globules that will come and attack you, and you have to vacuum those up. And so there is some nice light combat that folds into the flow of the game. The puzzles are simple but enjoyable. I got stuck once in the whole game, in the late game. The rest of them were just very enjoyable, very chill. And all the while, this music is playing that we're listening to now. And so I found this to be a very absorbing game. It has a really good, strong vibe to it. And I think that comes from the good writing, the well-paced story, this music, the colourful visuals, really nice voice acting, and just this very enjoyable, cosy, familiar, simple gameplay. As Rani and Bex chat to each other, it's just very conversational and it feels very casual, and you get a nice sense of their friendship. When you get near gunk, the radio signal cuts out, and whenever you've cleared the gunk and it cuts back in, Bex is so worried that Rani has got lost or gotten into trouble. So it has this lovely, nice, intimate feel. It's a good method of storytelling, and it's a smart way to add character to the game. The game just had a really, really nice mood, and I was always really happy to jump back in. And the gameplay develops nicely too. As you return to base, as you finish chapters, you can plant into the ground a beacon at a significant location that allows you to teleport back to base, where you can use the resources that you found to upgrade your glove. You can upgrade it so that it can fire projectiles to open gates and to power up machinery. Some of the power-ups are really impactful and change gameplay. Some are not impactful at all, just incremental upgrades, such as increasing the speed of your gunk vacuum, etc. And they're kind of jumbled up together, so you can't quite tell which are the important ones. I would say that the power-up system is one of the weaker parts of the game. It does feel a little obligatory, and there isn't much thought required for it. It could have been structured better, could have been presented better, and made more sense, and made you feel more like you were working towards something, rather than just completing chapters and unlocking new things without much thought or effort. It just kind of happens, which could be, you know, if you want a game that you don't have to think about too much, then The Gunk is that game. But for me personally, I would have liked the extra layer of enjoyment and engagement that came from planning my resources a little more, and from kind of mindfully collecting things rather than just mindlessly collecting everything. Although, I have to say, like, The Gunk is just a very enjoyable, relaxed experience, so I'm not going to critique it too hard for that. And the game does progress really nicely. The story intensifies at a really nice rate. You get just enough information to keep you interested, and then there are some big reveals and some big set pieces where you discover environments and sites that you really weren't expecting to find. And the story just ramps up really nicely. I won't spoil it here. I'll leave you to discover it yourself if you decide to play this game. But I can say that despite a little bit, I would say, in the third quarter of the game, there are some parts where perhaps could have been compacted down a little bit and it loses a little bit of steam. But as it's a 6-hour game, that's like an hour of gameplay, and everything else is just really good. So I think this is a game that it's worth getting to the end of. It has a good story payoff, and I really enjoyed my time with it, and I was really happy that I played it by the ending, and I felt very satisfied by it. It's a really good little game. So just to run through a few of the highs and lows of The Gunk. In the good column, the graphics are really bright, really fun. The swirling clouds above your head are really nice. The flora and fauna is really attractive, the gunk looks cool, and I was quite into the slightly strange, stop-motion-y, janky, puppety look to your character's run. I know that some people weren't a big fan of it, but I was. I found the voice acting to be very warm and personable. A lot of voice acting feels a little stiff and a little like someone reading from a sheet. But this felt very conversational. They did a really nice job. It's in the category of games like Lake, I would say, that do a really nice job of creating a cozy, real-life feeling to them. The story was a really good, solid, simple sci-fi story. I liked that it was episodic, so there are distinct chapters. Every time you plant a beacon and head back to base, it's a good opportunity to put your controller down and come back to it later, like you would a Netflix show. The central mechanic of vacuuming up gunk is really pleasing. I really enjoyed cleaning up this world. I really enjoyed the vacuuming mechanic. The upgrades gave a good reason for resource collection, which in turn gave a good purpose to exploring. I really liked the length of the game. I would say that this is comfort food gaming for anyone who grew up in the era of 3D action platformers, which I certainly did. It's like a really good, satisfying cheeseburger of a game, if you know what I mean. It's not exactly fine dining, but it just really hits the spot. But that said, it's not a perfect game by any means. In the bad column, some of the central mechanics felt underused. I think that the resource system, as I've said, was underdeveloped. The upgrades tree was underdeveloped. There were spam upgrades. They just didn't seem to do very much. That kind of undermine that great system of resource collection a little bit. You really want to feel like, you want to feel the reward. You want to see the effects on the screen. You don't want a plus 5% or a, you know, things like that. The scanner was underused. I would have liked to scan more of this world. I was really enjoying surveying this alien world. In the mid-story, there is a part where Rani and Beck start arguing with each other that goes on for a while. I felt that this felt forced in order to try and create like a false tension in the story, and I was happy when that was resolved. It was obvious writing, if you know what I mean. And for a game that feels so naturalistic, and you don't feel like you're listening to the words of a game script writer a lot of the time, you feel like you're listening to Rani and Bex. So when they start behaving in uncharacteristic ways, I raised an eyebrow at that for sure. There were a couple of little mechanical and technical things. There's a few problems that are endemic to the genre, such as invisible walls, things that look like you should be able to jump onto them that you just float against. And if you can float against scenery, there are probably going to be times when you miss jumps by floating against platforms. But this happens in all platformers. This happens in Psychonauts. This happens in Ratchet & Clank. This happens in AAA 3D platformers. Floating against scenery is just part of this genre. Sometimes when you are vacuuming up a patch of gunk, you clear it away. And when you've cleared away an area, it kind of refreshes the area. But to do this, you have to get every speck of gunk. Usually it's quite generous, but sometimes if you miss a little bit of gunk in a dark corner, you have to just scour the entire area again looking for it. There is no mini-map to guide you back to it. So that was a bit of a pain. I would say that some of the late-game areas have a couple of puzzles that feel like a bit of a stretch, like too many elements across too big of a gap. In most of the puzzles, you can see the elements right in front of you, so you know what you have to do. But in the late-game, there are a couple where they are spread out a little too much, and I got a little lost. There's also a slow walking section where your character gets very tired and you have to walk very slowly for quite a while. And this is a mechanic that we have seen ever since Journey. When you get to the top of the mountain in Journey, your character gets tired, you walk slow. But in Journey, it worked. In Journey, you've just climbed a mountain. You've been on a huge journey. And other games that have tried this have always failed. And so it's just frustrating in a lot of games, I think, to suddenly have your speed and maneuverability taken away. In Journey, it feels like the game earned it. And you were really with that character, dragging your feet through the snow to get to the top of the mountain. No other game has ever recaptured that magic, but this mechanic still hangs around. I kind of wish it would die. No more slow walking sections where your character is tired, please, unless you are Journey. But that's all of the downsides. I think all in all, this was a very satisfying game. I liked the retro feel of it. I do think that as a first step into the 3D space, as people call it, that they've done a really good job with this one. This is a very solid game and a perfect Game Pass game. And if you are perhaps milling around looking for your next big game, or if you've just finished a big, you know, a Ghost of Tsushima or something like that, and you're building up or waiting for Forbidden West and you want to fill your time with a few more indie games, then The Gunk is a perfect candidate. I think I would give this one a solid 7.5 out of 10. I had a great time with it. That's The Gunk. So that's our episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Happy New Year, everyone. We are in 2022. That can only be better than 2021, can't it, really? So I hope that you enjoyed that episode. I hope that you liked hearing about The Gunk. If you have Game Pass and you're into that kind of game, I think you'll have fun with it. It's a really enjoyable game. I enjoyed playing it. I hope you enjoyed hearing about it. If you have played The Gunk, I would love to hear your thoughts on it. You can get in touch with me on social media. I'm on Twitter at GamingInTheWild. I'm also on Instagram, Twitch, and YouTube. I posted up a video of my Games of the Year for 2021. I do like to edit together videos to go with the podcasts as companions for YouTube. I don't always have the time, but occasionally I will go that extra length to edit together a video. So that Games of the Year episode is up on YouTube. All subscriptions and that kind of thing are appreciated. All reviews. You can now review podcasts on Spotify. If you go to the podcast's Spotify homepage and click on the hamburger or the triple dots or whatever it is, you can put a star rating on the podcast. So I would really appreciate it if you're a Spotify user, if you did that. Same goes for Apple Podcasts, where you can also leave reviews. Both of those things help people find the podcast. You are also very welcome to support the show and to come and join our Discord community. You can do so at patreon.com/gamingInTheWild. And that's it for this episode. I'll be back next week with a new one. Maybe I will have finished Ender Lilies or Heaven's Vault, or maybe I will look back at some of those games that I played over the break in more detail. I'm going to try and get back onto a schedule of publishing on Thursdays. I'm running a little bit behind. I'm still running to catch up since the holidays, getting my feet back under the desk at work and that sort of thing. But I'm going to try and get back onto a regular schedule. For now, I think this episode will go out on Sunday. I'll try and get one out within the next 7 days and get back on track. So thanks very much for listening. Take care of yourselves and each other. Bye-bye for now.